Let's have a word of prayer and we'll jump in. God, thank you for this morning. Thank you for the opportunity to sing together, to reflect through that singing about what matters most. It's our prayer this morning as we talk about what might be for many of us a difficult issue, this issue of forgiveness. It's our prayer that we would recognize your spirit is with us, that we don't have to do anything to get you here. We don't have to jump through any hoops. You're with us. You're here. And you long to speak to us and to communicate with us, to embrace us. So help us to be alert and aware and focused on what it is you might have to say to us today. And just give us the grace to take the next right step. We ask these things in the strong name of Jesus. And everybody said, amen. All right. Well, we're in this series called Everybody Hurts. And when you talk about the fact that everybody hurts, it means that it's universal. It's all of us. None of us will escape life without pain. And when you've been handed pain or when you've been hurt, you've been wounded, you have to do something with that. And so we have really just a few options. We can have the option where we just try to ignore it and stuff it and pretend it doesn't exist. But that has some consequences and it doesn't really get dealt with and it doesn't really go away. And it just kind of keeps festering under the surface and can cause a lot of problems later. We have the option to return evil for evil. We can hurt the people who hurt us. We can seek revenge. We can maybe just pass it around to other people. They hurt us, and so we become the kind of person that just goes around hurting other people. We have that option, and it has consequences as well because it still doesn't deal with our pain, and we're just making the cycle bigger, and we're inviting more people to experience hurt. So the other option, really, is to enter into a process called forgiveness. And when we start talking about forgiveness, at least for me, sometimes in certain situations, I can resist it. I have a little resistance to forgiveness, and it's because of some misconceptions I have. C.S. Lewis said brilliantly, everyone says forgiveness is a lovely idea until they have something to forgive. Isn't that true? I mean, it's easy to say to somebody, oh, you just need to forgive that person who hurt you. You just need to forgive that person who gossiped about you. You just need to forgive that person who did whatever they did. You just need to let it go. You just need to forgive. Yeah, but the problem is when your friends say that to you, that person didn't gossip about them, didn't cheat on them, didn't lie on them, didn't do anything to them. And when you are the one who's been hurt, it's a whole different ballgame. Would you agree? Like somebody else's pain, you can sit back, oh, you just got to forgive. You just got to move on. You can't let that control your life. But when it's our pain and when we're the ones who have been injured and wounded, it's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different issue. It's a lot easier for me to look at your life and say you need to forgive than it is for me to actually enter into the process of forgiveness in my own life. So today we're going to talk about this idea of forgiveness, but I think we need to begin with, because I think lots of us may have some misconceptions about what forgiveness might actually be or what it might actually mean. So I want to begin with this. Forgiveness is not. I want to talk about what it's not. It's not forgetting. How many of you have that switch you can flip where you just forget everything anybody's ever done to you? I don't have it. I don't. I can forget every nice thing you say to me, but if you really hurt my feelings in 20 years and you come back and say, hey, do you remember that thing? Yes, I remember it vividly. You know what I mean? Like we have this really good memory when it comes to what people say that hurt us or what people do. And forgiveness isn't forgetting because the human brain, the human emotion, we aren't wired to just be able to forget. So we have to remember differently, maybe, but forgiveness is not forgetting. And forgiveness isn't going back to how it was. When you've been abused or you've been mistreated or you've been gossiped about and lied about and somebody's proven themselves untrustworthy, then forgiveness doesn't mean we're just going to pretend like this never happened and we're going to go back to how things were before. Because sometimes when people break a trust or break a promise or whatever they do that creates hurt, sometimes you can't go back. That doesn't mean you can't maybe at some point reconcile and go back to better than it was before, but you can't go back to where you were before. That place is off limits. You just can't go back to where you were before it happened. Forgiveness isn't just going back to how it was. There's a couple passages in the Bible that are interesting. If you're looking for a life verse or you're going to get a new tattoo or something like this, let me just throw out there. Proverbs 26:11. As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. Isn't that a great passage? And I think it's partly interesting because most of us, if you've ever been around like a dog, you've seen this happen and you're trying to forget it, right? You're trying to forget you've seen this happen. As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. This passage points out that people often go back to do the same things they've always done. But what this passage doesn't say is it doesn't say that when the dog returns to its vomit, you have to be standing there waiting. There are times when you have to get distance and space between you and someone else. Here's Titus 3:10. Warn a divisive person once. Warn them a second time. After that, have nothing to do with them. Think, about that. Warn them once, warn them a second time, and after that, there has to be a really clear boundary line drawn. Forgiveness does not mean having zero boundaries. We have to have boundaries. Boundaries are healthy. There are some people who you can't allow into your life because if you let them into your life, they're going to drag you and everybody in it into drama. Right? And so you have to say, it would be better. I'm trying to forgive you, but in order to forgive you, I need you to move like to Oregon. I need you to be out of my face. I need you to stop calling me. I need you to stop texting me. I'm going to change my phone number. I'm going to change my email address. And I need you to leave me alone because you're not healthy for me. Some people, and it doesn't mean God doesn't love them, and it doesn't mean somebody shouldn't come alongside them and help them kind of process all this, but maybe it's not best for us because some people are toxic to us, and we just need to draw really clear boundaries and really clear lines about what's okay and what's not okay. Will people be offended by that? Yes. Yes. There are times in my life I've had to draw some really clear boundaries, and it really upset some people, but for my health, my family's health, you just have to sometimes say that there's this line we just don't cross. There's this line that you're not welcome past because it would be toxic for us. So it's not, you know, it's not saying everything's going to be okay or just like it was, because you're not healthy if you're a punching bag. And if really, really destructive, toxic people want to keep using you as a punching bag, sometimes you have to say, absolutely no way are we going back to this. Forgiveness is not avoiding justice or consequences. There are sometimes with our actions, there are legal repercussions. You break the law, you go to jail. Forgiveness is not saying that there aren't legal repercussions. Somebody may have broken the law and hurt you, and they still need to be held accountable based on the law. Forgiveness isn't saying, oh, we'll just forget that, and we'll just forget all that. No, forgiveness doesn't rule out consequences if there are consequences that need to happen. Now, two things about what forgiveness is, and we'll jump into Matthew 18 if you have a Bible and you want to follow along. Forgiveness is personal. We talked about this last week. We sometimes say the church hurt me, or religion hurt me, but religion and church can't hurt anybody because they're inanimate organizations. They can't hurt anybody. People hurt people. Church people hurt people. Religious people hurt people. Non-church people hurt people. People hurt people. It's always personal, which means forgiveness has to be personal. If our issue is personal, then whatever mends that issue or deals with that issue would have to also be personal. And it's a process. It's a journey. We really emphasize journey here. We're about the next step on the journey, and forgiveness isn't something you just decide on a Tuesday at 3:45, I'm going to forgive this person. Forgiveness is a journey, and often it is one of those journeys that every day, every moment that what they did or what they said or what they've done comes to your mind, it is in that moment that you take the next step on the journey of forgiveness by saying, okay, God, help me not hold this against them now. I can't guarantee you that people who've hurt me in my life, it's not going to come back up again. It probably will. I don't have that switch to forget, but what I can do is when I'm struggling, I can realize this is a journey, it's a process. So every single day, I have to forgive people all over again. When it comes up, when something happens that brings that to the surface, it's a moment by moment, day by day decision, choice. God, help me not hold this against them. Journey. It's a journey we're all invited into. It's a journey that I think sometimes we over-romanticize things, and we think it's going to be just great and easy to forgive people, and it's not. Sometimes it's painful. Sometimes it's difficult, and we'll talk a bit about that this morning. So Matthew 18, Jesus has just been talking to his disciples about how to deal with conflict in the church, in the Christian community. How do you deal with people who maybe aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, or they're causing conflict and they're causing disruption? And Jesus kind of talks about this process. And then one of his disciples, Peter, who I feel like I'm kind of an apologist for him lately, because I think we read these passages about him and we think he was just a terrible human being. And I think he's much more like us than we want to give credit to. But Peter came to Jesus and asked, Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times? And so we read that and we think, oh, Peter's so unspiritual. But you have to understand, first of all, the word forgive that Peter uses here, it's the word in Greek, aphemi. It means to send away. So Jesus, he says, how many times must I send away the transgression? How many times when people hurt me do I have to send it away and not hold it against them? Up to seven times. Now, Peter lives in a culture where there's a lot of thought on this. He's grown up in a system. There's this extra-biblical text called the Mishnah, which Jewish rabbis wrote as kind of an explanation of their beliefs. And in the Mishnah, it says this, if a man commits a transgression, the first, second, and third time he is forgiven, the fourth time he is not. So it's four strikes and you're out by this rule. First time, second time, third time, you're forgiven. You do it a fourth time, no more forgiveness. So when Peter comes up to Jesus and says, how many times? And he says seven times. He thinks he's being generous. I mean, seven is the number of completeness in the Bible. It's in some way connected with God in Jewish thinking. Seven's a big number. Seven is wholeness. It's completeness. There's 7 days in a week. You know, there's this completeness. Peter says, how many times do I have to let them off? How many times do I have to send away the wrong? When am I allowed to hold on to it? When am I allowed to hold them accountable? When am I allowed to get even? When am I allowed to return injury for injury? When is that moment? And Jesus responds like this. I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times. Some translations say seven times 70. But here's the thing. If you start doing the math on this, you've missed it. Like if you're doing the math, so they offended me once, and you've got like one of those clickers, and now you're counting to 77 so you can get them back. If that's kind of what you're missing, what Jesus is saying. This is not a real literal number you're supposed to count to. Jesus is saying, if you're counting how many times you forgive, then you've missed the point. And he launches into what Jesus always does when he's confronted with something like this. He tells a story. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. This is typical in the ancient world. Many people ended up in debt because there was not really a middle class. It was really rich or really poor. And often what would happen is when you were in debt to a wealthy landowner is they would just sell you and your family and all your stuff in order to recoup some of their losses. So this is what's going to happen here. Now, to get a bit of a scope on how much money this guy owes, first, it's 10,000, it says 10,000 bags of gold. In the literal, it's 10,000 talents. A talent is a measurement. It's a unit of weight. It's used to describe, you know, money and how much things weigh. The word 10,000 in Greek, it's myrioi. I would assume this is where we get our word myriad. So it means just like a lot. So it means countless. So in this way of thinking, in this language, you wouldn't, like, they would say, like, we would use like this. I have been to the movies a million times. How many of you in this room have literally been to the movies a million times? Like, how is that even possible? You can't go to the movies a million times. So we use it as an exaggeration. So this 10,000 here, it's used to say this is an enormous, incalculable amount of money. It's bigger than you can even get your head around. But I thought, wouldn't it be fun just to see how much it really was if we took this literally? And so a denarius is a day's wage. It's roughly a current minimum wage, about $58 a day. A talent is 6,000 denarii, 6,000 days worth of work. And it's $348,000. 10,000 talents would equal $3,480,000,000 in today's economy. That's 60 million days work. That's crazy, isn't it? So, like, where do you begin? How do you start paying this back? Like, you get an old water jug and just start putting your spare change in it. Like, we'll get there. We'll get there. I mean, you don't, when you owe, at least when I owe, which I hopefully never will owe $3 billion, you don't just pay that back. It's not a repayable debt. What he's confronted with is he owes an amount that he could never scrape up and pay back. This servant fell on his knees before the king. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. The servant's master took pity on him and canceled. And the word canceled there is the same word used for forgiveness. He forgave the debt and let him go. Have you ever tried this with Visa? Does this work at Visa? You ever tried this at the electric company? Just give me time. I mean, it doesn't work in the real world, does it? No, when you owe a debt, you don't pay the debt. Then something happens. They take things away from you. They do something. They're going to get something if you can't pay. This servant falls down, begs his master for time. Just give me time. Be patient. I'll pay it all back. And the king cancels the debt. Which when I read this, I was just started thinking, why does the king cancel the debt? Like, what moves him to do this? Is it because of what the guy says? Is it because the guy says, just be patient and I'll pay you back? This is an non-repayable debt. Is it because it's good business to just forgive $3 billion when you're owed $3.5 billion? Like, how many of you think this is just, like, you would just write this off on your taxes? And if you would, if this is not a lot of money to you, can we talk after the service? We really need to chat because, I mean, this is unbelievable. This is terrible business. When somebody owes you $3.5 billion, you don't just say, I'll forget about it. I'll, you know, not a big deal. You guys go, have a great day. Everything's going to be fine. This is unbelievable. And what's interesting is there's still a debt that has to be paid. When the king forgives the $3.5 billion debt, it doesn't change the fact that this guy borrowed $3.5 billion and didn't have it to pay back. It doesn't change the fact that the king, the master, is still out $3.5 billion. Which means forgiveness of any kind always costs somebody something. To forgive means that there's been a debt. Somebody's indebted to someone else. And to forgive is to say, you don't owe me that debt. But the debt still has to be dealt with. Correct? It doesn't just vanish. It doesn't just disappear. It still has to be dealt with. Forgiveness always costs. And the story goes on. But when the servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him, began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. Now think about the way this servant was treated. He goes into the presence of the master. He falls down begging for time and patience. And the master, with grace and benevolence, forgives him what he owes. This servant then goes out, finds somebody who owes him, and begins to choke them. There's no conversation. There's no, hi, how you doing? It's an immediate chokehold. Pay me back everything. Put this in perspective. 100 bags of gold or 100 talents, it's roughly $5,800. That's a lot of money to me. Is that a lot of money to you? $5,800? But if you were to compare $3.5 billion to $5,800, which one would be like a bigger deal? When you compare $5,800 to $3.5 billion, it's not a lot of money, really, is it? I mean, it's nothing. And what's interesting is, I mean, I could get if the king said to the servant, you have until Tuesday at 3 to pay this back. Then, absolutely, he's going to go out and start choking people and demanding money. I mean, I'd probably choke people who didn't owe me and demand money. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just going to happen. But in this story, he's just been forgiven. His debt is wiped out. He owes no one. He doesn't owe anybody anything anymore. And yet he goes to somebody else. And he begins to violently harass them to get his money. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay it back. Have we heard this before? We are in the exact same scenario we were in before. But this time, he refused. Instead, he went off and had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I forgave. I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have had mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured so he could pay back all he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you, Jesus says, unless you forgive your brother or sister from your heart. A weird story gets weirder. Jesus tells, and when we see this story, we're like, oh yeah, yeah. The servant was bad because the king forgave him, so why didn't he forgive somebody else? That makes total sense. But then Jesus says, he doesn't let us off the hook. He says, you can't just make this about somebody else. This is about you. This is about me. This is about our relationships. And Jesus says that when this servant refused to forgive somebody else, everything he owed came back to him, and he ended up being thrown in jail, being tortured until he could pay it all back. And then Jesus gives us that night, you don't read this story before your kids go to bed, because he's like, and this will happen to you if you don't forgive people. This is a tough story. And I think what's going on here, we kind of lose, we don't really think more deeply about what is actually happening here. This servant who owes $3.5 billion has been forgiven a great debt, and he turns around and he refuses to forgive, by comparison, a really, really small debt. Do you think this servant understood what forgiveness was to begin with? Do you think he ever had a grasp on what forgiveness ultimately is all about? Do you think he ever really understood? Do you think maybe he felt entitled? Do you think maybe he felt like he deserved it? I don't know. I don't know what his thinking process would have been. But at some point, what he had just received, this grace and forgiveness he had just received, he refused to turn around and give to someone else. I think sometimes we can do things that help make things make more sense. And you guys are obviously asleep and it's raining, so we need to do something to kind of perk this up. So I'm going to make you breathe until you get dizzy. You ever done that? You just breathe. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to count to three, and I want us to take three really deep breaths. If you forgot to brush your teeth or you ate like an onion bagel for breakfast, please look at somebody else other than the person next to you. Maybe send it forward or something. So let's do this. I'm going to count to three, and I want to take a deep breath, and I'll just kind of guide you. We'll take three really big, deep breaths, and everybody has to play, okay? All right, here we go. Ready? 1, 2, 3. When's the last time you did that? You feel a bit lighter. What's interesting about breathing is breathing in many ways is what makes everything else work right. The human body demands oxygen to survive. We breathe and it kickstarts this process called respiration, and it makes sure everything's going as it should be, everything is like it should be. Everything kind of functions on whether or not we actually get this stuff called air. And we can't see it and it's all around us, but we depend on it to live. If we don't have air, what happens? We die, right? We need air. So if you just wake up in the morning, take one breath, and just stop breathing for the rest of the day, what happens? You stop living, right? Because breath is central to life. And imagine in Jesus' story here, this forgiveness of this debt. Let's imagine that this forgiveness is like a breath. It's this air. It's all around us, and we breathe in deeply. And our body's given everything it needs to function and work properly. It takes care of everything. We breathe deeply. Now, when we hold our breath and we refuse to breathe, that's a problem. Because what happens when we breathe in is then we breathe out. And what do we breathe out? We breathe in air, we breathe out. Shrimmer, shrimmer, shrimmer. Very technical scientific term. We breathe in air and we breathe out. Shrimmer, shrimmer. I knew I'd get you eventually. I was working real hard. We breathe out carbon dioxide. Now, carbon dioxide is deadly to human beings. So we breathe in this air, which is good for us and gives us life, and we breathe out something that's deadly to us called carbon dioxide. But it's not deadly to everything because we breathe out carbon dioxide, and it's good for the what? Plants and trees. And so we breathe out carbon dioxide, and it makes the plants grow. And so we grow vegetables and fruits and those sorts of things, and we eat those things. And so we breathe in life-giving oxygen. We breathe out carbon dioxide, which if we held it for too long would be fatal. And it keeps this cycle of life going. If grace is like air and we breathe in God's grace and forgiveness, I think what Jesus is illustrating here is that what was a blessing can become a curse. If you breathe in grace, but you never let it out, you begin to suffocate, right? Because what keeps you going is the ability to keep breathing. And I'm fairly confident that every moment of my life, I need a fresh breath of God's grace. Because I can go from zero to bad in about 2 seconds. You know what I mean? Like things can go from fine on the straight and narrow to like fishtailing real, real quick. Every moment we need a new breath. Every moment we need new grace. And the only way to get the new breath and the only way to get the new grace is to make room for it. And if you're holding on to yesterday's grace, you're holding on to yesterday's forgiveness, you're not letting it go, there's no room for anything new. And what this servant does is this servant receives this great gift, and instead of going and passing it on to somebody else, the servant wants to hold on to it, and it becomes toxic. The torture here in this story, I don't believe is God torturing us. I believe the torture here in this story is what we do to ourselves when we fail to understand grace. When we fail to understand that forgiveness is a gift that is meant to be passed on, we torture ourselves because we begin to hold our... Let me ask this question. What if God held you to the standard you hold other people to? Is that a universe you want to live in? What if God held you to the same standard you hold the person in traffic to? Do you want to be held to that standard? What if God holds you to the standard you hold the person in front of you? Like you have a checkout line a mile long and the cashier's new and they're like, I'm sorry, I'm just training. And they're having all sorts of trouble and they're having to ding that little bell and get the light. You know, when you're in the back of that line and you're in a rush, what if God related to you based on the way you relate to those people? What if God evaluated you and me? What if he evaluated us based on the way we evaluate our enemies? Do you want to be evaluated under that standard? What if God's grace toward us was just like the grace we have toward the people who hurt us? Is that a universe you want to live in? Is that a universe where it's a safe place to be? I think this story is trying to pull that out. What if God evaluated you the way you evaluate? What if God looks at us the way we look at other people who've hurt us? In this story, the servant failed to see his debtor through the way God, the master, has seen him. I just wonder how many of us, we've been going around and evaluating everybody under this really strict legalistic standard. And yet we've been going back to God and saying, okay, I need you to be kind and gracious and benevolent and forgiving toward me. I need more air, but I'm not going to give it. I'm not going to send it out so that it does good in the world. I'm just going to hold on to it until I pass out. See, grace can actually become toxic if it's held onto, because it means you don't understand it. It means we don't really grasp what grace is trying to do. Henry Nouwen puts it like this: to forgive another person from the heart is an act of liberation. We set that person free from the negative bonds that exist between us. We say, I no longer hold your offense against you, but there's more. We also free ourselves from the burden of being the offended one. As long as we do not forgive those who have wounded us, we carry them with us, or worse, pull them as a heavy load. The great temptation is to cling in anger to our enemies and then define ourselves as being offended and wounded by them. Have you ever met somebody who you walked away from that conversation, you said they have created their entire world around what they're against or around who's hurt them or what's happened to them? Have you ever met somebody like that? Like, they are their pain. They're no longer separate from it. It's not just that this happened. It has defined them. It has controlled them. It has ruined them. Forgiveness, therefore, liberates not only the other, but also ourselves. It is the way to the freedom of the children of God. I read a quote. I can't place the author at this point, but said that forgiveness is when you set a prisoner free and you realize that the prisoner was you. This dawned on me a few years ago, because there's some people who'd hurt me and I was holding on to it pretty tightly, and I still can, actually. It's a struggle sometimes, and you just want to hold on to it so tightly, and you're miserable because of it, and you just keep thinking and you keep rolling again and again about what they've said and what they've done, and it almost becomes a security blanket almost to think about how bad they've been to you. You just keep rolling it over again and again, and it begins to make you miserable, and it begins to make you cynical, and it begins to make you bitter. And I had this thought one day: I wonder if they are doing the same thing I'm doing. Because from the outside, they looked fine. I know appearances are one, but I really started to think, what if they hurt me and I'm far more miserable than they ever thought of being? And see, what happens is when we refuse to forgive, we refuse to breathe. The person we hurt the most is not the person we don't forgive. I'm pretty sure they, you know, are doing their thing. The person who suffers the most when we refuse to forgive is us, because we're holding on. We're suffocating. We're not getting grace. We're not getting the new forgiveness. We're not breathing in deeply of God's love. We're just holding on to bitterness, anger, and it's killing us. So when we talk about forgiveness, yes, we're talking about a refusal to make them pay. We will absorb the debt. We're not going to get even. We're not going to pay you back. We're not going to be passive aggressive. We're not going to hold you accountable. This doesn't mean we're going to reconcile. That's a different thing. But forgiveness means I'm not holding you accountable any longer. You owe me nothing. And at the same time, forgiveness is a refusal to allow what they've done to control us. Forgiveness is not only saying, you're done, we're done, you're free, not going to make you pay it back. Forgiveness is saying, I'm not going to carry around what you did with me and let it define me and let it shape me and let it become my identity. I'm going to breathe deeply of God's grace so that I can breathe out God's grace to you. And then I'm going to breathe more, and I'm going to breathe more. I'm going to keep breathing because I need God's grace to survive. I wonder how many of us are suffocating. And we're suffocating because we want to breathe deeply of God's grace, and that's beautiful, but we're not breathing it out. And the people who've hurt us and the people who've wronged us, they're not suffering for it. We are. We are missing out. When the lost son, Jesus tells a story in Luke 15 about a prodigal son, a lost son who goes away from home. When he comes home, his older brother is angry that the father welcomes him back, and they throw a party, and the brother is sitting outside, and the party's going on inside. And you just wonder, who's really miserable here? It's the brother, right? It's the one sitting. I wonder how many times we're outside the party because we're refusing to breathe in this grace and then breathe it out to others. Forgiveness is saying, it's personal, it's a process. It's saying, I refuse to make you pay me back. I refuse to try to get even. I refuse to try to do to you what you've done to me, because that just creates a ping pong cycle back. It's not going to ever resolve. I refuse. But I also refuse to let what you've done and what you've said and how you've treated me, I've refused to let that define the rest of my life. I'm going to breathe deeply of God's grace, and I'm going to breathe it out to you and to anybody else who needs it. And I'm going to keep breathing. I wonder how many of us today just need some deep breath. I wonder how many of us today need to let out the breath we're holding in because it's suffocating us, and we need to breathe in a new, fresh, life-giving dose of grace. So we're going to celebrate communion in a minute. And I thought, what better way? Because we've been talking about this idea that this master forgave, and Jesus is trying to get the point. This master forgives an immeasurable debt. So why can't you forgive a small one? And so Jesus sets it in context of God's grace and love toward us meets us, not when we've earned it or not when we've deserved it or not when we've climbed high enough on the religious mountain. God's grace meets us right where we're at. Correct? God's grace meets us in our brokenness and our wounds and our pain and breathes new life into us. And so what better way to reflect on what this means than to take the body and blood of Jesus? We're going to take this bread in a moment and dip it in this cup as a way of remembering. In Jesus' own words on the cross, Father, forgive. Jesus breathes deeply of God's grace, and then he breathes it out onto his killers. So today, maybe as you come to take this bread and dip it in this cup, you're reminded of God's grace for you and how God's grace has met each and every one of us where we were. Didn't ask us to jump through a hoop. Didn't ask us to just meets us where we are. And maybe as you take this bread and dip it in this cup, you breathe deeply, and you're reminded that God's love and grace for you is not contingent on how good you are or how well you perform in life. God's grace and love for you and his forgiveness for you are just there. They're yours. Nothing you can do to earn it. Nothing you can do to lose it. Nothing you can do to deserve it. God always extends this to you. And at the same time, as you leave here today, maybe as you've breathed in through the body and blood, maybe as you breathed in through this bread and this cup, you then go and begin to breathe out. So for some of us, it may be this. It may just be these simple words to God. God, these are the people. And sometimes what I find is not in public where there are lots of people around, but sometimes in private when I'm just dealing with these sorts of things, I'll actually name people. I'll say, God, you know so-and-so? You know so-and-so, I'm struggling with so-and-so right now because they really have hurt me and I really want to get even. I don't want to forgive them. I don't want to let them off the hook. I'm struggling. And maybe for you, it'll be saying, God, it's these people, these three people, these 10 people. God, there are 150 people and I'm really struggling here. But maybe you leave here and you begin to breathe, as you're conscious of breathing in God's grace, maybe you'll begin to, God, I give this to you because I can't carry this anymore. Jesus' words from last week that we read, come to me if you're exhausted, tired, worn out, and I will give you rest. Maybe you're exhausted, tired, and worn out because you've been carrying around what everybody's done. And maybe today is the first step on a long, difficult, sometimes painful journey of saying, God, take this. They are better in your hands than in mine. God, take this pain, take this hurt that I've been carrying around, and moment by moment as I give it to you, take it. And maybe for some of us, as we take this bread and dip it in this cup, our next posture before God is to just say, this is yours. These people are yours. Their words about me, what they've done to me, this is all ultimately yours. I entrust it. I give it. I surrender it. And tomorrow morning when I wake up and it's all back in my lap again, because that's going to happen, I'm going to do the exact same thing. God, today, this moment, take this and give me a fresh breath of grace. So let's have a word of prayer, and our band's going to come up and lead us, and then we'll have our students are actually going to serve as communion this morning, some of our youth. So they'll be in the back with communion, and you guys can go. You can sit and reflect. You can go take communion, take your time, whatever you need to do. God, we're grateful for the grace which meets us right where we're at. That, as the writer of Lamentation says, your mercy and compassion for us are new each day. And so for those of us who are in this room right now on this rainy Sunday, and we're suffocating because of unforgiveness, we're suffocating because we refuse to breathe out what we've breathed in, I pray that through this bread and this cup, through this moment today, as we're reminded afresh and anew of your grace, it's our prayer that you will help us to begin that first step on a long, arduous journey of forgiveness. That first step that says, God, help me breathe in anew your grace and peace and forgiveness and love. And then as we leave this place, whether we come in, there are some people we don't need to come in contact with, God. We need to forgive them from afar because they're toxic to us. But help us in wherever we're at to begin, maybe even symbolically, to breathe out your grace toward them. God, we're grateful for Jesus. He shows us the path toward true life. A life that is not depending on getting even, but a life that sees everything as grace. The next breath, the next moment. For those of us this morning who are wounded and hurting, and maybe we're just not at the point on our journey where we can even begin to think about forgiveness yet, help us to just breathe today and be reminded. Let's breathe and be reminded of your goodness and your love for us, and that you are the same God who right now is giving our enemies breath as well. God, we love you and we're grateful. We take this bread and this cup. We worship, reflect, because you're good to us. Pray this in Jesus' name. Everybody said, let's stand together. Communion's available in the back. If you'd like, at any point you want to go, feel free to go take communion.